Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about Battlefield 5, stylized as Battlefield V. So this is the game that could have been called Battlefield Bad Company 3 according to certain rumors, but now it's increasingly looking like it's called Battlefield 5. And we are going to be talking about this because there are a bunch of things apart from the game itself that concern the whole gaming industry. That is to do with the microtransactions that we saw with Star Wars Battlefront 2, which horribly went wrong. And this game could correct some of those wrongs and lead us to FIFA 19 as well. So to talk about all of these things, we have our games editor, that is Rishi Alwani.
Holy crap, Pranay, that was an epic intro.
Okay, thanks. And friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani.
That intro was longer than the Battlefield 1 single-player campaign.
Oh, snap. And yeah, possibly true. But anyway, getting...
Hold on. I'm your host, Pranay
Parab. Oh, yeah, that too. We forgot. But yeah, a massive hilarity on Battlefield 1's campaign aside. What Pranay did start off with was to say that, yes, this could have been Battlefield Bad Company 3. Now, what Pranay actually meant by this was that there were rumors prior which suggested that the next Battlefield game this year would be set in Vietnam and would take place in the Battlefield Bad Company universe. Now, for those of you who are unaware, Battlefield Bad Company was seen as a spin-off series to the main Battlefield games. And those games focused on usually a squad of four characters and their misadventures through war zones. So it was more of a take on movies like Three Kings rather than a 1:1 reality of war kind of theme that past Battlefield games have been known for. And it ended up developing a cult following. I think till this day, people still play Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Yeah, multiplayer.
Yep, but right now, this doesn't seem to be the case. The next Battlefield game will probably be Battlefield V or Battlefield 5. And will take place in World War II.
Yeah, you know what? So the original rumor said it will take place in Vietnam, right?
Yes.
So maybe that's why they put that V in there and then moved it to World War II.
Oh, so Battlefield Vietnam in World War II.
Yeah.
Time paradox.
Battlefield Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah, but which actually brings us to the next point. Like, if you think about it logically, you already had Battlefield 1. So why move straight to 5 or V? So apparently it's because we already had Battlefield 2, which is back in, I think, 2005 or 2008, I'm not too sure on the dates. Yeah, so 3 and 4 already happened, right? So, this naming structure makes Square look good with the Final Fantasy naming structure of 3 and 6. So, yeah, less said the better. But yeah, so apparently we're getting a new Battlefield game this year. And the thing is, what we do know for sure, and keep in mind that a lot of this is based on leaks and rumors that have been going around over the internet, particularly from sites like Kotaku and GamesBeat, as well as US Gamer. But what we do know for sure, and this is something EA has admitted, is that yes, we're going to get a new Battlefield game this year. And there is a good chance it'll be an October release. Now, the reason why this also comes into the picture is because there's another big EA shooter that's on the horizon, which is Anthem, and which basically seems like BioWare's take on Mass Effect meets Destiny. But again, details on that are a little scarce, and EA has said it's been pushed back to next year. So, yeah, we're getting Battlefield V5.
Yeah, so I'm actually very interested in the single-player campaign. I don't really care much about multiplayer. But then as Mike said earlier, the Battlefield series is not exactly known for single-player anymore.
No, like jokes aside, Battlefield 1's campaign was, it was pretty good. Like, in fact, they were like self-contained stories. You played different perspectives and the way it started, in fact, was a little jarring because like they just throw you in different positions and like in the opening 5 minutes, you just die as different soldiers and all. But... it was pretty, like, well done. In fact, like, DICE games always are, like, good as a spectacle and production values are, like, I think the best ever. Like, I don't think you'll find a better sound design in a shooter than a DICE game. So, in that aspect, it's really good. But, like, since a lot of people praise the campaign for Battlefield 1, regardless of the length, just the campaign, I expect they'll follow that structure for Battlefield V's campaign when that happens. And, but more important than the campaign is what's been announced or what's been rumored for the presentation of how they talk about microtransactions, where they're going to go, like how when Battlefront 2 was announced, they sort of overcompensated on, yes, there's a single player campaign, yes, you can play it offline. So details right now like point towards DICE saying that there will be microtransactions, but they will be purely cosmetic. There will be no pay to win microtransactions. And one thing to note is while everyone praised and was happy when Battlefront 2 had no season pass or premium edition, eventually the game is basically a joke because of how they implemented pay to win. So Battlefield V is almost 100% going to have a $50 season pass or premium, which is what Battlefield 1 and Battlefield 4 had. It's sort of DICE's tradition to do a $50, like you pay $50 more than the $60 asking price, and you get premium, which gives you the season pass multiplayer content. So that's something which people should just expect for sure if there are no pay to win microtransactions.
I don't know. I kind of think that that ends up being a very divisive move. Because if we saw what's happened in Battlefield 1, yes, it's been an unmitigated success for EA with over 25 million players and all that. But fact of the matter is, the moment you go with a season pass for a game like this, it basically means you're fracturing the community. Unless, of course, they allow... Because let's be honest here, right? Like today, if Pranay buys the game with the season pass and I don't, I just buy the base game, usually I won't be able to play with him. I mean, they've tried mitigating this in the past where those without the season pass could play with those who do. But it'll be interesting to see what the execution is going to be like. And honestly, I don't think, given the current situation and the current economic climate of gaming as a whole, where EA can get away with a $50 season pass over and above a $60 game. That means you're looking at a $110 purchase out of the box. Now, why I say that could be a concern is because if you look at Destiny 2, Destiny 2's standard edition is $60. You paid $80, $90 for the game plus season pass. Now, when $90 still is a lot easier to manage than $110, $120. So it'll be interesting to see if EA decide to actually go ahead and broach that barrier, especially given the fact that you have so many other options. I mean, if you look at the situation when Battlefield 1 was out back in 2016, and if you look at the situation now, people have options. There are other games to play, and there are other games that let you get on board cheaper. Rainbow Six Siege is one example. Overwatch is another. Plus, you have, I mean, and if you're up for it, yeah, Destiny 2 is like $16 right now on Amazon. So my point is, there are options. I don't know if they have that much of a competitive advantage to charge that extra $50.
I think they've been very successful in the past doing it, and people like the Battlefield fans, they just don't even want to try Call of Duty and stuff like that. So for them, like, it's a new mainline Battlefield game made by DICE, and they'll just pay up for it. And what they usually do is they let you like buy the stuff piecemeal as well. So like, you can, instead of buying I think 5 expansions for $50, which is what they usually do, or 4 expansions, you can buy them for $15 each. And yeah, with Battlefield 1, initially it was really bad where they fractured the user base, and like, people who have the season pass get like more servers eventually and stuff like that online. But they might do the thing where, like, as long as one person has the season pass, that group of whoever's in the party can like play along on the same maps and stuff. They might even do like what Gears of War does with map rotations and all. Gears of War tried that, so they might do something like that. I mean, Splatoon basically survives on that. Every 2 hours, they just change the map. Everything's free. So I don't see a situation in which, if the microtransactions are cosmetic only, there is not going to be a $50 season pass, given what both DICE and EA have done in the past. Like, you can say there's no this thing. They won't even announce they can try not announcing premium at launch and just, you know, like, talk about how the game is going to be great, get post-launch support, and after the reviews are out, after fans are happy of the first week, say, oh, by the way, there's premium for $50 Like, the attach rate has been really good for Battlefield 1's premium. Like, almost everyone I know who plays Battlefield 1 has it, so...
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, while I do agree, yeah, that the attach rate might be good, it's also a question of when people buy it, right? As far as I know, not many people would spend the straight $50. I picked up the premium edition as well, but I paid, like, $15 for the full game.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, they just want you to buy the whole game day one. When you buy premium doesn't really matter. And the only, like, Battlefield 1 premium finally got discounted when we both got it.
Yeah.
It was like, what, Battlefield 1 came out, what, 2016?
Yeah.
We're in 2018 now and it dropped to 15. I don't think EA cares that much at that point. Like, they just want... I'm pretty sure Battlefield 1 is in EA Access Vault as well.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so at that point, they just want people to buy the it has microtransactions as well, as far as I know. So they just want people to buy that stuff until the next Battlefield game comes out, where you get $60 more. So I think after the first year, they don't really care at how much you buy a premium for, because it dropped quite a bit. In fact, it wasn't as bad as Battlefront 1's premium, because I remember that dropped to like $5 at some point in some stores. So
yeah, but ultimately EA as a company looks more at its bottom line, and that's why we'll probably have this $50 purchase that you suggested. And even if they don't have any pay-to-win microtransactions, I don't really see like EA not trying to, you know, get as much money as possible from people.
I mean, that's what every publisher does. But given the whole what happened with Battlefront 2, they are definitely going to overcompensate with how they talk about microtransactions. And there is going to be premium, because it's happened since Battlefield 3, I think has had the $50 premium or season pass. And true. It's worked for them multiple times. And Battlefield 1 was insanely successful.
Yeah, but you know what would really make Battlefield 5 awesome?
What if it's Chapter 3 of MGS5?
No, let's not talk about games with missing content. Rather, if it had a mode called Battlefield Royale, or if it had zombies.
Why?
Because you can't make a good shooter without zombies.
Okay, so before we get to all of those things, I think we should be speaking about like what we expect in terms of setting and gameplay. So I do know that it's like something to do with World War II, and after Call of Duty, I think this is probably another game that's, you know, going back to the thing that seems to be most popular with gamers in shooters.
Yeah, I mean, World War II honestly, it's reached a point where I don't think it matters anymore. Because it's cyclical, right? I mean, the entire genre of war shooters started with Battlefield back in the early 2000s, and that was purely there was some form of single player, but it was purely multiplayer spectacle, and it was World War II themed.
So, and you know what, I'm gonna correct you there. Yeah. The entire spectacle of war shooters started with Yodha in India.
That is debatable. For those of you who are unaware, Yodha was a first person shooter made in India, which focused on the Kargil conflict between India and Pakistan, where you could, as a soldier in the Indian Army, you could get more health by drinking Pepsi. Yes, it had that element too. And it was made, I think, on the Build engine, which was
that cross-promotion. It's like, yeah. It's like Destiny and Red Bull now, and Dissidia, Final Fantasy and Red Bull as well.
More like Cup Noodles and Final Fantasy 15, but yeah. And so that was one of India's first-person shooter in the late 90s, complete with its own music video. And you can check out the story in depth on gadgets360.com.
It'll be in the show notes too, so you can check
it
out there.
So thank you, Pranay, for bringing back that memory. But yeah, jokes aside, so essentially World War II was a theme used to bring shooters back into the limelight. And they just seem to be going back to what worked then, because I mean, after World War II, they had the futuristic setting, you had the modern day setting. And I mean, this makes sense. I mean, it's cyclical at the end of the day. You want to go back to keep things from getting stale. Now, what is interesting though is that an earlier leak suggested that the entire campaign would take place from the German viewpoint of World War II. Now, considering that ended in a very messy fashion, I don't think that would have made sense at all. And a couple of other reports corroborate this. They claim that yes, it'll follow the same self-contained mini story approach that we saw on Battlefield 1. So that's pretty heartening to know. In addition to that, there is a cooperative mode, which is planned as well. And that apparently will have players going through random conquest missions. Conquest is essentially one of the larger gameplay modes in Battlefield. We basically have to capture parts of a map and do specific objectives. And apparently that'll be available in co-op, which should be fun to see. Because honestly, I mean, for the longest time, while Battlefield is known for its competitive multiplayer and it's known for its single player, it's nice to see that co-op gets a nod again. So
yeah, it's actually increasingly rare to see good co-op experiences. But if they do it properly in this one, then that'll probably be like the second big EA game to get co-op focus after A Way Out, which is probably releasing sometime soon.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And I think it's something that a lot of readers have talked to us about, have mailed us, where they keep asking what's happened to co-op gameplay, what's happened to split-screen gameplay, and why don't we see much more of this in the future? Why is it that I have to have an online connection? Why is it that I have to have a second console to play with friends? So, you know, it's nice to see that we're at that stage where developers can afford the approach. And I use the term afford from a technical standpoint here. Because during the PS3 360 era, you had limited bandwidth and processing power to work with. So to see them actually using what they have to good use to actually allow for co-op play would be nice to see. Now, we don't know if this co-op play would extend to local or couch co-op. This is something that's unknown at this point in time. And honestly, it'll be fun to see whether they allow it, because they did it. They allowed for split screen in Battlefront 1. So who knows? It is possible.
Yeah, and I'm actually pretty happy to see that, because, you know, you don't have to pay like $80 a year to play online or, you know, to play with someone, you know.
Yep.
So co-op modes are obviously a big win as far as I'm concerned. Cool then. I think we've spoken about microtransactions as well, but what we haven't spoken about is what happens to FIFA, which yes. is probably EA's biggest money spinner in terms of microtransactions.
It is. In fact, like we've spoken about this in the past also, just having FIFA, like having a console with FIFA means more consoles sell. Like it took a few years where Microsoft had marketing rights for FIFA, but Sony finally got that. And what FIFA usually has with console bundles is you get FIFA Ultimate Team special stuff you can only get if you buy the console bundle, which is what happened with the PS4 and PS4 Pro. In fact, those were available in India as well. And Rishi, why don't you tell us about FIFA Ultimate Team and how important it is to EA's bank balance?
Yes, so from what we know, it's very important. So, like, I think the way it's kind of obvious here that FIFA is essentially EA's cash cow. It's been its cash cow for over a decade now, and with good reason. It's had a mode called Ultimate Team, which I think debuted with FIFA 09. And what it let you do is let you cobble together your own ragtag bunch of misfits to take on the world in soccer, football, whatever you want to call it. And the cool thing here was with Ultimate Team, and because these are players, and players are usually in the real world, while players are graded, ranked, and, you know, have stats attributed to them, Ultimate Team decided to do that, but obviously in a fashion that resembled top trumps or trading cards. And what essentially happened was, if you were the sort of person who was willing to spend a lot of money, you could end up having a really good team. Now, keep in mind that a lot of these would be tiered, they'd be ranked, and you'd obviously have to essentially pay to see what you get. It was randomized. And that's what worked. It ended up being essentially pay to win, and which is really amusing, because when the entire Battlefront 2 debacle kind of blew out of proportion, I was reading a comment, I think, on one of the FIFA subreddits where the guy was where someone was like, oh, so this has become legislation, people are outraging. For us in the FIFA Ultimate Team community, we call it Tuesday. So it's an audience that's willing to pay. It's an audience that's pretty much plugged into to football as a lifestyle. And the way I see it, If you look at that part of EA's business, and if you look at what they want to say and what they plan to say with Battlefield 5, it seems to be a situation where it's kind of like a protectionist move, in the sense that, hey, there is going to be a spotlight on loot boxes. So, hey, you know what? Our latest game is going to be cosmetic only, not pay to win. But, you know, let's not talk about FIFA at all. FIFA is a separate little beast. Let that be, you know, behind the curtain. And let's be honest here, their two biggest franchises are Madden and FIFA. The monetization on both is extremely popular. I think they've done close to $1 billion on FIFA alone in terms of microtransactions. And that aside, I mean, personally, I know a bunch of people who spend close to 15,000-20,000 rupees a year on Ultimate Team. So it's there are people who are willing to pay for that advantage. There are people who are willing to pay to have the best team. And it's a question of bragging rights. It's a question of personal pride, because, you know, people are attached to their club for some reason. But yeah, so the way I see it, it just, to me, this seems like a peace offering kind of situation where, hey, you know, our latest game is going to be cosmetics only, but don't look at FIFA. Let's not talk about FIFA, because
yeah, I'm sure they can't afford it, because I think upwards of $700 million every year FIFA makes from Ultimate Team alone.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the way I see it, Ultimate Team is as good as it gets, like as close as it gets for, like, if you see gambling and the video game industry. This is it, right? Like you draw a bunch of cards which you pay for, and then ultimately, like, when you open that pack, it may contain a good card, it may contain a bad card. So
yeah.
But the thing is, like, you know, people keep bringing up this whole gambling thing with FIFA and Battlefront 2 and all. It's still not like literally where you actually get money out of it on Steam. a lot of games, even PUBG, like I remember Gamescom crates, people used to just get those and sell those. In fact, a lot of people made back the $30 they spent on PUBG just from that. And they continue to make more money from selling drops. So from loot boxes, which you get. So I think that's basically more because you actually get it back in currency with FIFA. It's stuck in the game, in the economy. I mean, in fact, like FIFA is the cause of a lot of account compromises on Xbox and PlayStation. At least it was a long time ago when two-step authentication wasn't a thing. So, like, it's just baffling that, you know, like, people just, like, you remember when CSGO Lotto was a thing?
Yeah.
So, like, stuff like this where you literally have money coming back to you, that's a bigger problem, according to me.
I think it's a question more of what people attach value to. And if people will attach value to digital digits, which constitute to having a character or to having a player that that has a 90% chance of shooting on goal, I think it's safe enough to say that too could be considered as gambling.
No, it is.
Despite there's no money, no actual raw money element to it, I still think it does. But it's just a question of the value attached to it, right? And to be honest, the only reason this is even becoming a question of public debate is because it happened with
Star Wars.
Yeah, which is basically a cultural icon. At the end of the day, when you have something like that, which gets a lot of bad publicity.
Yeah, even though football is pretty much universal across the world.
Yeah, but like the moment like Star Wars got tainted, Disney woke up and apparently Disney spoke to EA and there was lots of discussions happening in the background. Then there's also a rumor that Disney's talking to Activision and Ubisoft for future Star Wars games to see if something is possible. But
that would be awesome. A Star Wars game set in the Assassin's Creed universe.
Cool then. So yeah, I think that's about it about Battlefield 5.
Yeah.
And we should probably be talking about the games we've been playing this week. So I think I'll go first. I've been playing this game called Alto's Odyssey. I pretty much finished the whole game. It's a sequel to Alto's Adventure, which is like an endless snowboarding game. So Alto's Odyssey is an endless sandboarding game. Pretty good overall. Like, if you liked Alto's Adventure, you'll definitely like this. If you don't like Alto's Adventure, then yeah, Alto's Odyssey is not really for you. And if you've never played Alto's Adventure, then I would say that you probably start with Alto's Odyssey itself because the art is just really nice. They have multiple locales and new tricks and everything. Overall, the game feels like an extension of the previous one. But if you play the previous one again, it might start feeling like a bit repetitive because the locale doesn't really change that much. So I enjoyed this game a lot. I think the review is up on the site and, you know, we've given it a pretty good rating. So you can check that out. And it's only, what, 399 rupees. So even if you don't want to buy it right now, just wait. And in a few months, there will be a sale and you'll probably be able to pick it up for half that price at some point. But I'll highly recommend it. Like, it's got a really good progression system also. So they give you like 3 challenges. It's not like a Subway Surfers type endless runner. So at the end of every level, you like basically have to finish 3 challenges. So whenever you finish those challenges, you move to the next level. Every 10 levels, you unlock a new character. So overall, pretty well done. And I think mostly I've been playing that game only, apart from a bit of Yakuza 0, which now I am trying not to finish because I think I've reached a point in the main story if I go through with that part, then I don't think I'll be able to play all the other mini games and business stuff in the game without coming back to the premium adventure mode or something. So I think I am pretty happy with where I am in the main story, and I'm just like maxing out my business. Because apparently, if you finish that Real Estate Royale mini game in Kamurocho, then you get a new fighting style at the end of it. So I'm waiting to unlock that. It's apparently the Dragon of Dojima fighting style.
The red color one.
Yeah, so I'm waiting for that now. So I think I'm, about maybe 50% through the business side of things. And now I'm like seriously, like instead of maxing out all of my businesses, what I'm doing is attacking that real estate segment for like maximum wins ASAP. So let's see how that goes. What about you guys?
I finished Life is Strange Before the Storm yesterday. And it was really good. Like in everything except for the ending, it was better than the first one.
So basically, Tumblr, the video game.
What?
Yeah.
The OC, dude.
Same thing.
Okay. So no time travel, but there's this other backtalk mechanic thing which they've implemented. But yeah, basically, it's like when Telltale used to make good games. And the music they got composed for the thing is like phenomenal. So did that. Also playing some Xenoblade 2 since the patch hit. And they've allowed you to like skip a lot of animations when you're opening blades. And I managed getting the rare Cosmos, which apparently is a 0.07% chance to get when you opening core crystals in the game. Other than that, playing a lot of Splatoon 2. Netcode's been working fine, so playing that. Booted up Overwatch, and I forgot Bridget was not live on console, so I switched it back off. And yeah, basically that.
In my case, I've been going back to Yakuza 6. Going back because, yes, we finished the full campaign. Look out for a review on the site soon enough. Shameless plug aside, I have been playing a bit of Splatoon 2 because, yeah, as Mike said, the netcode's been really good. So, been playing a bit of multi. It's quite fun, quite accessible, as usual. And we've been revisiting Persona 4 Golden because there's something about that soundtrack which makes me just want to come back and play it. So, aside from those, yeah, I've essentially been playing Overwatch as well. Trying to just, you know, I've been playing it with a few friends. It's quite entertaining, as usual. I don't mind the fact that the new support character Bridget isn't out yet because I'm still trying to come to terms with certain other characters like Zenyatta and Junkrat. But yeah, I've basically been playing those.
Cool. I think that's all for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, if you have any questions, comments or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. And the music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulsen, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. Thank you so much for listening.